So it's a discussion. So it's not a seminar. I haven't prepared any official PowerPoint, blah blah blah. So and the title is first announced as Universality Without Symmetry. And kind of one of the point of the discussion is not kind of so that the speaker tells you something, but that the speaker learns something from the audience. So it's hopefully educational both for the speaker and for everybody else. So one of the reasons that I'm giving is this discussion is I'm hoping to learn something about universality, maybe something about symmetry, because I don't know much about either of these. So let me kind of first say what I have in mind when I say universality. So universality means that you have some have a collection of systems which have different microscopic properties, but which exhibit the same macroscopic behavior. And of course, it's very easy to imagine something that, a bunch of systems that have, different microscopic properties, same microscopic behavior. Just take a pendulum, and the way this pendulum swings, it doesn't really matter if it is made of, metal, plastic, wood, or whatever. So this is kind of one very kind of silly example of universality. But that's not what I have in mind, because really the reason, the fundamental reason that the pendulum swings the same way regardless of its chemical composition is because its swinging is due to its coupling to gravity, and gravity couples the same way to everything, right? And so the reason for universality here is essentially because the microscopic interactions of gravity with matter is the same. But it's so this is not the kind of universality that I would like to talk about. So the universality that I have in mind is more kind of along the following lines. So think about a system that is made of many particles or many interacting degrees of freedom. And think about the system at finite temperature. And of course, at finite temperature, kind of the whole point of thermodynamics is to say that the physical system is described by basically very few variables, say temperature, volume, chemical potential. So all the physics is contained in, say, in the free energy or some other potential, which is a function of thermodynamic variables. So this is kind of one example of universality. Because you have different systems, different microscopic interactions in equilibrium. They're all described by a very few number of parameters. Now, if you go slightly out of equilibrium, right? So if you go slightly out of equilibrium, this means you have to study small variations of this temperature, infinite volume, say small variations of temperature, density, and so on. So your behavior is now described by hydrodynamics. So this is equilibrium. So if you think about Navier-Stokes equations, this is out of equilibrium. And so the dynamics here is controlled by some small number of parameters, transport coefficients. And so if you think about some physical system, so think about some physical, substance, water, for example. Right? So everybody here has some form of liquid. So the phase diagram that you have as a function of pressure and temperature, it typically looks something like that. So there is a line here, there is another line here. It's a three critical point. Now this is a solid phase, right? And this is a gas phase, a liquid phase. And of course, if you're interested in thermodynamics, you study thermodynamics, you basically your problem is to compute free energy, in one of these two phases. And if you study, slightly out of equilibrium phenomena, then basically your problem is to compute transport coefficients in, you know, some of these phases. But usually when people talk about universality, they don't talk about, you know, this gas phase or liquid phase. They talk about some very particular point on this phase diagram, which is this point, the critical point. And if you are in a thermodynamic equilibrium, then the questions that you ask in the vicinity of this critical point are not the questions about kind of thermodynamic potentials. The questions that you ask are the questions about critical exponents, which tell you about the divergences of various, you know, physical observables such as susceptibility or magnetization.
If you want to start calling a free energy a universal quantity, a free energy is dimension 4. It has dimensions. So if I have a scale, it's certainly not a good idea to call this universal. At least you should take renormalized quantities and build dimensionless quantities out of this.
Which I will do in the next 5 minutes. The point that I want to make is that in equilibrium, the questions that you ask here are the questions about free energy. The questions that you ask here are the questions about critical exponents. Now, if you're out of equilibrium, the questions that you ask here are the questions about transport coefficients. And if you're out of equilibrium in the vicinity of this critical point, then the questions then you ask here is the question about, about dynamic critical phenomena, dynamic universality classes, and various dynamic critical exponents. Now, what I would like to discuss is that I would like to discuss the notion of universality, which somehow relates to the part of the phase diagram which is not in the vicinity of the critical point. So when people usually talk about universality, they mean something is universal near the critical point. So, you know, universality classes basically is defined as a collection of, you know, Hamiltonians that have the same critical exponents. But what I want to argue is that something kind of similar may happen if you are away from the critical point.
But this happens all the time in particle physics when we calculate low energy properties. You calculate something on a lattice, you look for the universal properties. Of course, it's always away from a critical point, typically in particle physics. So you ask for low energy properties, for long range properties.
Is it close to the critical point?
The universality at the critical point has a well-defined meaning.
Yeah.
And a well-defined apparatus or normalization group, et cetera, et cetera. So you're going to suggest something that replaces that and is equally well-defined?
Well, I'll give you some examples that will say that it is not crazy to think about universality away from the critical point. So let me just from the very beginning, let me say what I have in mind. Now, universality class is defined as a collection of systems that have the same critical exponents, you know, in the vicinity of the critical point. You can also find a huge collection of systems that have the same transport coefficients, which are away from the critical point. Okay. And if you look at it this way, then you have, you know, you have a collection of, you know,
the same in some scale version, so the dimensionless number.
You can, yes, the same dimensionless numbers that characterize, you know, transport properties away from the critical point.
Like viscosity or entropy.
That's one example. But what I want to argue is that one example may signify something more, because this is not the only example.
But in this example, it's just if you choose to look at the shear viscosity, you will find universality. If you look at other things, you do not, right?
Yeah.
So in particular, even at transport properties.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when we come to viscosity, let's discuss viscosity. Right? But before we come to viscosity, I want to discuss something which is, you know, simpler than viscosity. So what I want to discuss is, I want to discuss universality in thermodynamics, or some kind of analog of universality in thermodynamics. Then I want to discuss universality in charge transport, and then I want to discuss universality in momentum transport. And then kind of the whole point of discussion is to find useful notion of universality for strongly out of equilibrium phenomena. That's kind of thermodynamics. Now, as Jürgen pointed out, free energy is a dimensionful quantity, and if you want to say something about universality, you better find something that is dimensionless. And to find something that is dimensionless, so let me restrict myself to a particular class of systems which exhibit scale invariance, just for simplicity. Yeah. And if you take your scale invariant model at zero chemical potential in infinite volume, then your free energy is equal to, well, it's proportional to volume. In d dimensions, it's proportional to t to the power d. So there's a minus sign here, and there is some coefficient, which let's call it c. Okay. So this c is dimensionless number.
Critical point now?
Hmm? Well, it's a matter of language. I will depart from a critical point. I can depart from a critical point, but if you think about this t, okay, so this t is not the same as this t. Okay.
No, but at the critical point, the scaling can be different, right? Because here you would never have. So you are way away from critical point, and that's significant because at the critical point, one of the exponents is in the, what is it called, specific heat, mm-hmm. and specific heat is a bunch of derivatives.
Now, this T is not the same as this T.
Oh, I see. Okay, I missed that. Yes. You said that, but I kind of didn't pay attention. Sorry.
Right. Now, this T means you take your scale invariant model and put it in a slab geometry with periodic boundary conditions along the slab direction. And the, you know, the length of the compact direction is the inverse temperature.
And that other T, what it is? I thought that what temperature was kind of.
This was the introduction. Right? Don't think about this picture anymore.
No, but by temperature you mean here, okay, periodicity in Euclidean time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I'm with you, but then my comment applies because, for example, near critical point, the specific heat has funny behavior on temperature, and from your formula,
no.
I will obtain Z minus two.
Yeah. You do.
No, but he has a critical point at zero temperature,
takes
some mass.
Yeah. Ah, okay.
Yeah. Cool. So again, this T is not the same as this T. And this is some number. Now, and since this is now a dimensionless number, it makes sense to think about universality. Now, and of course, this dimensionless number is just a number. It's, you know, it's a different number for a different model. Now, what I want to do now is I want to find a different number that may be related to this number. And so if I think about, you know, relativistic theories, then in relativistic theories, it's typical that scale invariance implies conformal invariance. I mean, it's not always true, but it's typical. And this means that you basically, so think about conformal field theory. That conformal field theory in two dimensions, I mean, there is well-known, I mean, not well, well, basically, in any dimension, you can associate a central charge to conformal field theory. So in even dimensions, it can be related to trace anomaly in external gravitational field. In two dimensions, it is basically a central extension of the conformal algebra. But in any dimension, central charge appears in the two-point correlation function of energy-momentum tensor. So at zero temperature, two-point correlation function of energy-momentum tensor in the vacuum, well, it has a very simple form. By dimension, it has to be x to the power 2d in d dimensions. there is some index structure here, some pi mu nu alpha beta, which is, you know, completely fixed by the condition of tracelessness, symmetry of T mu nu, the exchange of mu nu and alpha beta, and conservation of T mu nu. And there is some number here, which is called the central charge. So this beast, you know, it's something, you know, very, very simple, something like delta mu alpha, delta nu beta, minus 2, minus 2 x mu x alpha x squared. Various permutations. So basically what I want to say is that a conformal field theory has a central charge as something, you know, specific to this theory.
And so, but, yeah, but I mean, this is a complicated question, as you know. I mean,
yeah.
Except in cases where you have a lot of supersymmetry people, yeah. That there's a C there, but it yeah. doesn't have all the properties that it does in two dimensions necessarily.
No, but the only thing that I want to say is that a two-point function has this form, and this is something which characterizes a given CFT, right, in any dimension. That's I don't make any bigger statement. So now there are these two numbers. This one is C. Well, okay, so let me call this one C prime. And so in general, these are two numbers that characterize your theory. These two numbers, in principle, have little to do with each other unless you are in two dimensions. Okay, so in two dimensions, these two numbers are related to each other in a unique fashion. Basically, one is proportional to each other. And the reason for that is that in two dimensions, the transformation from a plane to a cylinder is a conformal transformation. So if you know something at zero temperature in two dimensions, you also know something at finite temperature. And from this, you can relate this number to this number. And the relation of these two is something like pi over 6 d for 2. Now, when d is greater than 2, then a priori there is, you cannot make this argument of transforming, you know, your space to a finite temperature space. So there is no universal relation between C and C prime. However, what I want to say now is that there exists a large class of models, a large class of field theories, where this C is related to C prime in a very unique fashion. Just like it happens in d equals 2. So there is a large class of models that have different symmetries, which have some universal relation between C and C prime. So it's, you know, C over C prime is equal to some known number. And so just to give you some examples, what these numbers are, that C prime over C is equal to pi cube over 162 D equals 3. C prime over C is equal to pi squared over 80 D equals 4. And so on. So basically, this number is some combination of 2s and pi's. Yeah. So these theories are relativistic quantum field theories that have a dual description in terms of classical supergravity on an Eddius space. So
they're supersymmetric.
Not necessarily. It's something that has maybe there are non-supersymmetric theories that have. You know, the landscape is big. And
these relations are true at any coupling in those theories?
What?
These relations are true at any coupling?
This is at a critical point. So the coupling.
No. So complex. These relations are true for a class of theories that have dual description in terms of classical gravity or supergravity on, you know, ADS d plus 1 times something. Right? Typically, to have, you know, classical gravity description, you need to send your coupling to infinity. But still, this means
theories also exist, say, n equal 4 in 4 dimensions. Yes. It exists at any value of the coupling, and it's conformal.
Yeah. 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 So this presumably will not hold if you depart from that.
How many different theories are if you choose some different d? How many different theories in your universality class that we know of?
Well, pick your favorite compactification, right? Of ADS 4 times, you know, something, you know, 7 dimensional. ADS 5 times something 5 dimensional.
So I guess.
So no, as long
DP brains, all flat DP brains will fall into that.
Absolutely.
Right, but my question is, besides that, is there anything else that will fall into that? That was my question.
Well, I mean,
it's not that many. I mean, we're
no. What do you mean? It's not. No. I mean, you're
talking about flat DP brains.
Well, I mean, you can take all these, you know, the T11, you know, the YPQ, all these, you know.
Bunch of them. So also brains on the isolated singularity.
Yes, I mean, as long as you have your geometry, which is ADS d plus 1 times something, you have that.
So do you know any argument in, without going to the dual, geometrical argument, like it exists in two dimensions?
I don't know.
Now that one knows the answer, you should be able to find an argument.
Okay, now, again, so this is what I mean as an example of universality in thermodynamics. It is something that is formulated in terms of pure dimensionless quantities, and it's something that tells you that free energy is uniquely determined by the central charge in dimension greater than or equal to 3.
So I'm confused. Take n equal 4 as we coupling. The coefficient C prime depends on the coupling. Right, there was this famous two.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? But C doesn't depend on the coupling.
Yeah.
So how can the ratio?
At weak coupling, you don't have classical gravity. At weak coupling, you don't have dual description in terms of classical gravity.
That's the original question. So then this ratio is only during the infinite coupling. Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. For n equal 4, yes.
Okay, I see. In that sense, it's universal.
In the sense, in the sense that besides n equal 4, there's a whole bunch of theories.
Okay.
For which this is also true.
But it's also
a different coupling. Because you are sitting always in the supergravity approximation.
Mm-hmm. But those theories which are dual to this, you know, ADS times something, they do not have to be. I mean, they do not have to be formulated, you know, as some free theory plus exactly marginal deformation, you know, as n equal 4.
Yeah.
But they can be just endpoints of some RG flow. So in this sense, they may not even have some well-defined, you know, notion of coupling.
Yeah.
When you have this analogy with the two-dimensional theory, so in the two-dimensional theory, because you can define C which decreases along the RG flow. In four-dimensional case, there are two objects which you can define, which enter the conformal normal, C and A. But in principle, it's A, which, if anything, it's A, which decreases along the RG flow.
Okay.
Does this mean that you lose some universality? When you go, so in two dimension, the universality statement is strong. So you have C, it enters the entropy, it also decreases. In four dimensions, this is not the case.
So I don't know if decreasing along the RG flow has anything to do with this universality. Because, for example, this is true in D equals 3 as well. There is no such thing as A in D equals 3. Right? So A only exists in even dimensions.
Well, yeah, I only wanted to say that two dimensions statement is strong.
Yeah, but I don't know the connection to, I don't know how to relate universality, this type of universality, to something decreasing along the RG flow. I don't know. That's kind of the first point that I wanted to make. Now, another interesting point that I think is interesting is that you may ask, okay, so this is something that is true for a large class of theories, but these theories are pretty exotic. You know, there are very many of them, but they all have the same property that they're dual to something, you know, on on an eddy space with one extra dimension. Now, you may ask, what is this number for some known CFTs, which are, you know...
What is it for the Ising model?
Well, for the Ising model in three dimensions, to the best of my knowledge, this was not computed. However, this was computed in the ON model, in the large N limit, which is the generalization of the Ising model. And the answer for the ON model is this. So for the ON model, C prime over C is equal to, let's normalize to this. It's equal to pi cube over 162 times some number. This number happens to be zeta of 3 times 2 to the power 4 times 3 cube times 5 pi to the 4. So if you compute what this is equal to pi cube over 162 times 1.0662. The point is, it is very close to 1. So the difference between the ON model and this eddy CFT is, as you see, it's 7%.
It's a norm for CPM model.
I only know the answer for the ON model.
I'm wondering, black body, just for comparison, if I take photon gas and Z=4, the black body radiation, what would be there?
Well, you don't know
what is. It's some... Oh, goodness. I don't remember. But it's
presumably 3/4.
No, right. One of those numbers by which there is a difference between a weak coupling construction. It is 3/4. Okay.
Yeah. No. I mean, for the black body radiation of made of fields of n equal 4 super young Mills, this will be 3/4. For the black body radiation made of photons.
Photons. Yes. It's different because the fermions and.
Yes.
I mean, conceivably have different. I don't know.
Yes, I don't have this expression, but it's very easy to see what it is. Okay, so to emphasize this,
for large N.
Yeah, this is large N. Yeah.
So this is N goes to.
Yeah.
And there are corrections.
There are corrections.
Which way is it known? Which way does it go?
No. I thought about this. It's not a bound, right? Because if you study weakly coupled theory, you can go both below and above this thing by choosing different matter content. just to finish with this. Now, it's like a good example of universality without symmetry, because field theories that have this, they may have different gauge groups, different representations of matter fields, different amount of supersymmetry, and they still have the same ratio. Okay, so this is something that I wanted to say about universality in thermodynamics.
But if you take ON of different representation, again you can solve the model, I guess. Not vector representation, a different representation. Can you solve the model in this case?
Can I solve?
No, just assume it is straightforward. It's exactly like for CPN model, not necessarily fundamental representation, you can take another one.
I suspect so. I mean, as long as it's a vector model, not a matrix model, like a gauge theory. Yeah.
And you assume it's going to be exactly the same?
Well, I mean...
if you show me an exact calculation for a matrix model large N, that would be great.
Okay, now...
One question. In these theories, they do all give the same ratio of C prime over C.
Yeah.
Higher order correlators of T will be different, though.
Yes.
So it's only this one lowest order correlator that's
different. Well, it's only this piece of it, though.
Is there only one piece?
In principle, so in higher order correlators, other kind of other central charges will appear, like this A that Andre was talking about. But of course, in eddy CFT, C is equal to A. So
but well, description is just Einstein action. So is that all high point functions also defined the same?
Well, the central charge you can extract from Txy just like shear viscosity, right?
Three-point functions should have exactly the same form in all theories. You just do one calculation, one IDSDFT calculation.
No, no. The form of three-point function, I think it only depends on the conformal symmetry. It doesn't depend if it has an... Oh, wait. Well, I mean, there is this also. Okay, so there is this relation in C equals A in ADS-CFT. Right, so it's
so you're saying, I think, that a large N is just pure gravity, so it's going to be the same in all these theories, right? Mm-hmm. All the higher point functions.
You can exchange different fields in the intermediate channel.
But is that one of the N's, of course?
Higher than 3 point. Not immediately clear to me.
Connected three-point function, is that universal? Does it have universal
function? Three-point function, I think that's universal form.
In ADS-CFT.
But in your calculation, this C is really the volume of the Horizon main form, right? Mm-hmm. So in particular, you can imagine considering on the gravitational side, the space which is just intuitive ideas, which is confinement to anything. And yet, at the temperature larger than confinement temperature, you would still have the same form.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's not specific to the conformal theories.
It's not specific to the conformal theories in the sense that, I mean, if you have confinement and so on, you will not have this same type of free energy, but the subleading coefficient in the free energy in a non-conformal theory will be related to the central charge in this way. This is right, because subleading coefficient will follow from this asymptotic ideas part of the geometry. I think that's right.
I'm sorry, I'm confused. So if I have a theory which is only asymptotically, for example, ADS, yeah, then your C prime will depend on dimensionless ratio, M over T, right, or whatever the scale, mm-hmm, lambda over T. Mm-hmm. And so it is only the leading pieces that I probably should expect to agree, right, or satisfy it. But the subleading pieces would be different.
Well, I mean, leading pieces in the high temperature
right
limit, yes. So, or subleading pieces in the low temperature, that's what I meant. And, okay, but the question that I wanted to ask here is that given that there exist, these classes of field theories that have this ratio, the question that you may ask, are there other, if you wish, non-Gaussian fixed points that share the same value of C prime over C, which is, not necessarily equal to this one. So let me just write it down. And I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's a reasonable question. Basically saying that this ratio C prime over C can be thought as a means to classify, like, whether it is a useful means or not, to classify your CFTs in dimensions greater than 3. I don't know, but at least it's...
The question, are there other non-Gaussian points, I mean, other than these?
And given that analytically I only know only of one example, so in this ON model, but presumably numerically it should be relatively easy to calculate this in larger spin models. In larger spin models, you can. well, okay. So this is something that I wanted to say about thermodynamics. Now let me go to the charge transport. Now, in charge transport, of course, you're interested in conductivity. And if you're very close to equilibrium, then linear response tells you some expression for conductivity in terms of current-current correlation function. And this expression is known as so-called Cuba formulas. So let's just look at the current-current correlation functions in thermal equilibrium. So C mu nu of K is equal to, well, it's basically this. Let me write it in this form. Where this is the transverse projector, and this is the longitudinal with respect to the spatial momentum k, basically Pij. Transverse is just delta ij squared. Okay, so this is just a general decomposition of the two-point function of two conserved currents in thermal equilibrium, and the Kubo formula for the conductivity basically tells you that sigma of omega over t is equal to 1 over omega times pi t of omega at zero momentum. Now, at zero momentum, there is also no difference between transverse and longitudinal, so you find it is the same as 1 over omega times pi L omega k at zero. Now, let me point out two kind of simple things. One is that except for exactly zero momentum, these pi t and pi L, they are completely independent, because they just tell about two different, you know, symmetry channels. So pi t and pi l are two different functions. And in general, the sigma of omega is a very non-trivial function of omega. So let me kind of draw a cartoon of what you would expect for this function, say in d equals 3 in three dimensions. And in three dimensions, conductivity happens to be a dimensionless number. And so at high frequency, it is frequency independent, just a constant, does something like that. If you have a weakly interacting theory, then at small frequency, there is a kinetic peak like you find in any weakly interacting theory whose height is proportional basically to the mean free path of your quasi-particles. Well, and then it does something in between. So this is kind of a cartoon of how you expect sigma omega to look like. These two, you know, regimes, they're physically different regimes. Now.
This is for conformal field theory at finite temperature.
Huh?
This is for conformal field theory at finite temperature.
Well,
the ratio of omega.
Well, I mean, in principle, it can be for non-conformal too. I mean, depending on what this thing is doing in between. But the feature that it is constant here at high frequency and it has a peak at low frequency is not specific to conformal theory.
But you're saying there's an independent temperature dependence, and like, there's another scale. Yeah,
well, I mean, in principle, it will be not just omega over t, but you know, other. So my second point that I want to make now about universality of charge transport is that, again, there exists a large class of models, again, which have, you know, different symmetries, they have different representations of matter fields, such that IT of omega k times pi l of omega k is equal to minus chi squared times omega squared minus k squared times 3 over 4 pi squared. Now, what is this equation? Now, this equation tells you that in those particular models that I'm talking about, again, there is a large class of them, pi t and pi l are not independent, just like, you know, C and C prime were not independent in what I was talking, you know, 10 minutes ago. And this chi here is charge susceptibility. So it's basically chi is equal to expectation value of charge squared in thermal equilibrium. So you divide it by volume to make it, you know, finite, and then you divide it by temperature squared to make it dimensionless. So this is what chi is. And if you now want to extract conductivity, so conductivity you obtain by taking the limit, you know, k goes to 0. So when you take k goes to 0, there is no difference between pi t and pi l. This means basically pi squared is equal to omega squared times some number. You divide by omega to get your conductivity, right? So what you find is that that sigma
theories, pi t and pi l are also related by gauge invariance.
So what?
Pi t and pi l are related by under gauge invariance in a weakly theory.
So what you find is this relation that conductivity divided by susceptibility is equal to 3 over 4 pi. Now, what this tells you is that conductivity is uniquely fixed by susceptibility, just like this free energy was fixed by the central charge in thermal equilibrium. And again, so this is something that does not usually happen, because conductivity is a dynamical quantity. Susceptibility is purely equilibrium thermodynamic quantity. But still, the two are related in this unique fashion. Now, what are these class of models that I'm talking about? Well, as you can easily guess, this class...
They're related in a very specific limit, just not in general.
Okay? Not in general. For this for this particular class of models that
I'm...
This is how you define your conductivity. Right?
Sigma of a chi, that's diffusion,
right?
Is that D?
Yeah. So
these... As well as the S-duality?
Well, S-duality may be too strong. Electric-magnetic duality.
Does it mean that where the sigma is now frequency independent?
Yeah. So one point is that sigma is uniquely related by... is uniquely determined by chi. And the other point is that sigma is frequency independent. So for this class of models, this picture does not work. Now, and to tell you that it is surprising that it is frequency independent, I have a book here. Right? Just to give you a proof, there is a book. It's called Quantum Phase Transition by Subir Sajdev. And there is a paragraph here that says the following. It says, so speaking about this picture, so it says, the distinct physical interpretation of conductivity here and conductivity here make it clear that in general there is no reason for them to have equal values. But then he adds in parentheses, we cannot, of course, rule out the existence of exotic models or symmetries that may cause this and this to be equal. And of course, little did you know that these exotic models happen to be M theory. Which is, you know, one of the class of these two.
This is a case of universality with symmetry, right? Because, I mean, yeah.
Why is this with symmetry?
Well, I mean, it's electromagnetic invariance.
Well, it is symmetry in the dual description, right? The symmetry is not so obvious in the original description. Yeah, it's a
connection in the other case with symmetry is not so clear.
ABS.
No, because the OM model is also conformal, right? It doesn't have.
Indeed.
So it's not just that.
So the dual gravity there, whatever it is, it's very, coefficient three is a very different one. Sorry.
No,
Which of these models?
Well, yeah. So, these models are, again, these are conformal field theories that have a dual description in terms of classical gravity on ADS 4 times something. So again, these are conformal field theories which have a dual description in terms of classical gravity, just like these ones that have, you know, C over C prime fixed by some value. I mean, for
it's
some
like
of...
Like the previous case, it's a statement about the critical point.
Again, not about that critical point, but it's a statement about some quantum critical point.
Yeah.
But not about this one. But
but it's still the universality of a critical point.
Yes. Yes.
You haven't so far given us an example where you're in the middle of the phase diagram.
My final example about the middle of the phase diagram. Yeah.
But here you need to have the Young Mills. It's not just classical gravity, but classical Young
yes.
Mills too.
Yes.
It's Maxwell.
Well, yeah, but it's on ADS 4 times something. And when you reduce metric on that something, you automatically get Young Mills in ADS 4. Now, of course, my last example in the universality of momentum transport was something that was discussed a number of times at this workshop. And this is universality of shear viscosity.
So, I mean, just before you,
yeah.
Like in the previous case you discussed, and even though Sabir says there's no reason why they should be equal, are there known examples where you can calculate where that isn't the case?
Well, yeah, in the ON model, you find precisely this type of picture, that in the ON model at large.
I mean, it's factor of N now, even. I mean, they're
very different. Oh, they're different by factor of N?
This says, sure. Yeah. And this is another one. And in the epsilon expansion, this is order 1 over epsilon. Shear viscosity. Now, the statement here is, again, is that there exists a large class of models that have different symmetries, where shear viscosity is uniquely determined by entropy. So again, so you see, it's something similar to this relation, where some transport property, such as conductivity, was uniquely determined by your thermodynamic quantity, which is susceptibility. So here, momentum transport coefficient, which is viscosity, is uniquely determined by some thermodynamic parameter, which is entropy. Now, however, this kind of relation, it is actually stronger than these others that I was talking about, because this applies to models with different symmetries. Then also different gauge groups, of course. Different representations of fermions or scalars. Scalars. With or without mass gap. And in any number of dimensions.
As
equality. Well, provided, I mean, D is less than, I don't know, 9.
Plus chemical potential.
zero or finite charge density. Now this class of models that have all these, you know, with or without mass gap and so on, different dimension, they all have the same viscosity over entropy ratio. Now, this is something that you do not see every day. I mean, this is an old result, but what I want to emphasize here is that people usually discuss this ratio because, you know, 1/4 pi is a small number numerically, and so there are some potential, you know, maybe you can say it may have something to do with heavy ion collisions, where hydrodynamic simulations favor small viscosity. Now, what I want to kind of stress here is that from one point of view, it's not the smallness of this number which is interesting. It is the universality of this number that is interesting. It is not just, you know, n equal 4 super and Camille's. It's a whole bunch of stuff in different dimensions, you know, different symmetries, confining or conformal. They all have the same, you know.
One useful notion of universality, for example, is in the context of universal classes. If I take one representative of that class and do some computation, it will automatically be applied to all other classes, yep. Which is not the case in this.
It depends what question you ask, right?
Well, I mean, again, for example, there are other quantities. The mm-hmm. simplest way to see why that is not the case, mm-hmm. because the answer will depend on which quantities you ask.
Of course. Like this conductivity.
Right, but representatives in that universal class have features within the same, say, looking at the transfer properties that are different.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Like this conductivity will be different. I mean, it's not 3/4 pi if you go to 4 dimensions, right? It is the case. So kind of the whole question is, how do you formulate the useful notion?
In the context of conformal series, I think your statement was stronger, right? So at least, you know, I can take pretty much any conformal field theory, can have whatever group representation, right? Whatever gauge.
Yeah, but if you go to 4 dimensions, it's a different number. It's 1/2 pi. It's not 3/4 pi, right? If you change dimension here, this doesn't change, but this does.
Right.
But is frequency independence true, other than 2+1 dimension?
No.
So, I mean, there's not even.
Yeah.
It's not a different number.
Yes. So in 3+1, conductivity will have dependence on omega, but in 2+1, there's not. This is what I wanted to say about, you know, universality of thermodynamics, universality in charge transport, universality in momentum transport. Of course, you know, as Alex and other people, you know, yeah.
But that class is pretty wide. And what characterizes it?
It characterizes, so these are the theories that have a dual description in terms of classical supergravity on asymptotically ADS space.
If you wish, it's a property of non-conformal horizons. As long as you have a horizon in 10 dimensions, you interpret that horizon as dual to some gauge theory. And, you know, that can be a black hole that is rotating or whatever.
No, I understand. It's all of those, yeah.
But it's at infinite coupling as well.
It's at infinite coupling.
The moment you go from an infinite coupling, that universality is broken.
Yep.
What zeta over is for non-asymptotically ADS spaces, like the cascade theory?
1/4 pi.
So it's not necessarily asymptotically ADS.
It's not even necessarily.
It's a mass gap.
But it's not just infinite coupling, it's also infinite n. So the moment you go to the possible finite n, you look at s duality, you observe that there's a very large coupling.
Right.
No, but David and collaborators, they computed, you know, corrections, 1/n corrections, and 1/n corrections vanish, right? If you had fundamental matter.
Yeah, but not
1/n squared.
Not
what? Not 1/n squared, but 1/n. So this is my final point that I wanted to kind of say here. So this universality, kind of this kind of three examples that I was talking about here, is the universality of classical gravity. Because the common feature of all these models is that the universality class, if you wish, is defined in terms of their dual description, not in terms of the original, you know, Lagrangian of the theory. So on. So this universality is universality of classical gravity. Maybe supergravity, if you wish. And as you know, as was pointed out here, quantum corrections to classical gravity will modify these universal relations. But as long as you have classical gravity without quantum corrections, you have these universal relations.
I think there is one, at least it wasn't clear to me, just, you know, maybe some people thought about this. So there is another assumption of that, and that's in particular relevant to models as you mentioned. So there is this universal behavior, but in particular in theories which have mass gap. So I would say that that's a universal behavior provided you are in a deconfinement phase. It's not clear to me.
Yes.
It's not clear to me even how you ask the question of
yes.
the cube. What
absolutely.
It can be different, right? So. So that's, I think, is an open problem.
It's an open problem, it's a restriction, but still, even with this restriction, it's a huge, you know. Now,
but that's also classical gravity.
That's also.
No. I'm just saying that, you know, if you learn how to compute in models like that.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Then you have to be more specific about how you define universality class. That was my only point.
All right. So the final point is kind of something, kind of to go beyond the linearized approximation. Because what I said here, I said about universality in thermodynamics and universality in near equilibrium transport. Okay. Now this whole program is kind of focused is towards, you know, strongly non-equilibrium physics, not weakly non-equilibrium physics. And so something that I want to ask is, what are the universal questions that one may ask in strongly non-equilibrium relaxation processes? Okay, again, what are the dimensionless numbers that you can find that could potentially be universal, so that you can define, you know, honest universality classes, you know, away from the critical point? So what are the universal numbers that characterize strongly non-equilibrium response? And if you believe that this type of universality here is universality of classical gravity, then this universality in strongly non-equilibrium response should be related to some universality of basically full-blown non-linear gravity, not just, you know, small fluctuations which are linear, which are relevant for this linearized response. Right. So these are questions for both kind of people who work in non-equilibrium quantum field theory and people who are experts in gravity. Right, so how can you relate this to? I don't know. I'm asking. But
I mean, non-equilibrium in that sense means initial value problems.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore you are sensitive to the initial conditions. In what sense could you ask their universal questions?
The same as in your case when you have some intermediate scaling.
When you have a non-thermal fixed point, then you can ask pretty much the same questions as you did here for thermal equilibrium. So static solutions or approximately time translation variant solutions far from equilibrium.
Scaling solutions.
Scaling solutions, yes. That's the only class I can think of. But these are independent of the details of the initial conditions.
Yeah,
and of course that's
the erased.
Yes,
it's like
that's a prerequisite.
In this context, I would say it's a collapse in the black hole.
Well, yeah. So something along these lines.
There are universal. I mean, there's the whole attractor mechanism of gravity, which is sort of erases just about everything.
Like inflation.
But on top of that, you would need scaling.
Yeah, that pole is a problem.
Actually,
there are critical exponents in gravitational collapse, you know.
Yeah.
So
that's yeah. So does anybody know how to relate these critical exponents to
the Chapter thing?
Yeah.
Well, there's a paper. You know, there. Some of our colleagues have identify yeah, that word.
But it has nothing to do with this.
It's not time with evolution. It's a very different, it's critical for a very different sense. It says that if you have some initial configurations of collapsing scalar field, and there, you introduce some parameter, and if below this, below critical values is no black hole forming, after it's forming in very sharply. So you change this parameter a little bit, you have very sharp, like phase transitional abruptly.
That's different. So something I was thinking about is like these tails, you know, that something that you mentioned, you know, to me the other day.
So in other words, the features of the collapse erase initial conditions, but have some intermediate asymptotics. Example in black hole is called price tails of fields. Scalar fields or electromagnetic fields, they remember the fact that they are collapsing, but not the tails. It's a power law decay of the tails.
That's just in asymptotically flat space. I think in ADS, you actually get an exponential decay at late times.
Why not?
It's because so that power law tail is due to the fields that go out a long way.
You need barrier. You need the barrier. This is only due to the barrier in the structural geometry.
No, I think it's due. So I think this almost okay. If it's the same one over T, so this power law,
it's
related to the fact the potential falls off the power law at long distance.
Yes.
But in ADS, it doesn't happen because the path is a box.
It's related to the potential that very long.
Okay, it's different. I think it's different.
You get an exponential decay.
Of the potential.
If you may ask
the field.
Question.
Yeah.
Of the thing on your box, which is really the moral of the story,
yeah.
You meant perturbative classical gravity.
Yeah.
And the real question is when you put in non-linearity and take gravity in full.
That's the question.
He's talking real nonlinear gravity.
But I mean, for example, this question, I mean, the very question of thermal equilibrium,
yeah.
is the question of black holes, right? So black holes is not just perturbative gravity. It's, in a sense, these computations are small perturbation on top of black hole, right?
Exactly.
But you need to have a black hole in the first place.
Yeah, but you want a full nonlinear.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, so but relating a problem which is very hard in gauge theory, a problem which is very hard in sub gravity.
It's traceable. It's numerical relativity.
What? That's very easy. Very easy.
All right. That's all I have to say.